Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I'm Raven, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and this is my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 17, XX. Original air date, March 4th, 2004. Director, Duran Sarafian? And I feel like this is the first time. That has to be new. And writers are Anthony Zeigart, not new. And Ethley Ann Vare, which I also feel is new. So that's good.
I wonder if they're from something.
I don't know. But
I feel like sometimes like you'll have like, guest like showrunners from like another show will come in. Direct an episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. But we start this episode. I know that we see like do we see the streets of Vegas or it's a Vegas overpass? I'm not quite sure. Before we go to a desert and we go to a bus. But before then, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
You know, I was looking at it. I don't think we have any opening scenes.
Okay. I didn't think we did.
The first points come at 4 minute mark.
Okay.
I did forget to add them up. So we're doing it live.
We're doing it live. 24,
29, 30, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 36. Pretty good. Okay. There's a lot of scenes, including a lot of long scenes. 5 seconds. For one scene is a long hold.
That is a long hold. So just three of those. As a short side note, as you were calculating that, this writer literally only wrote one episode of CSI. So this is her one and only CSI episode that she wrote. She wrote other things.
This director.
But the director, I don't know. I haven't looked at the director. Oh no. I was looking at the writer.
The writer did write 28 episodes of Andromeda.
Andromeda, yeah.
Which is a show that I don't know why I watched, but I watched a lot of science fiction shows in there. And the director, I mean, he looks fancy. And he produced 34 episodes of House, which is a show I've heard of before.
I mean, I've seen some. I haven't seen all of it, but I've seen some episodes of it.
But there's some crossover between them. So yeah, I bet they work together. I don't know. Yeah, nothing pops off the page of like, oh.
Oh, he did 16 episodes of CSI New York.
Yep.
So.
Okay. We'll talk. Maybe we could talk about it more at the end once we put out our feelings on the episode of the whole.
Okay. So, sorry, what was our final, what was our biggest score?
36. Pretty good.
36. All right. That's respectable, especially not having an opening scene.
Our last episode was also 36, though.
Oh, all right. Well,
we're getting more into these, come advance. No 71, which was a few episodes ago.
No, definitely not a 71. So we go to an overpass to the desert, and we get to a bus that is being followed by a man in a car who's very annoyed, who tries to pass the bus, and instead, for his trouble, gets a arm flying up from underneath the bus and into his windshield.
I mean, he should have just passed the bus earlier. He would have been fine.
He would have been fine, but he was waffling on whether he wanted to pass or not. We cut to Jim Brass on scene. He has a pensive look on his face. He has a very, poignantly pensive look. Catherine and Nick arrive, and Jim Brass makes the comment, because they're like, why are we here? It's an arm. And Jim Brass is like, where there's an arm, there's usually a body. So they go to check the bus, and they look underneath the bus, and there is an apparently female body torn asunder, tied up underneath the bus.
I will say, they're like, or is it Catherine's like, why'd you call a, such and such a number, like missing body or something? And, or maybe Nick says that. And I remember thinking there's a body here, right? So, or there's an arm here. Like that is a human arm in of itself warrants CSI.
100%.
Whether someone's arm was cut off or, maybe it's not necessarily criminal, but there could be a missing person,
Yeah.
There could be a hiker dragged off by wolves or coyotes in the woods. Who knows?
Yeah. An arm attached deserves further investigation.
Yeah, for sure.
So I agree. We go to credits. We return to Catherine and Nick. They're still with the bus. And they, as they're, they're investigating the victim and the area where the victim was tied up, they realize that she was tied up with low thread count fiber. Fabric. So had she had nylon or something like that, they're theorizing, she would have escaped, essentially. Because at this time, they think this was a prison escape attempt.
Yes.
So that is what they're thinking at this point. Catherine stays on site to supervise body part collection. David shows up to assist. She sends Nick off to get Sarah and wants them to go straight to the jail. We then go to Grissom and Warwick. They are with a stabbing victim. We learn that the victim in question is Adonto Adams, and he is Zero's brother. Zero is the person who, like, actually lives in the apartment. And they realize that he was stabbed in the chest and the back. So this was not a single stab and go. This was several stab wounds. We're then with Catherine and Doc Robbins, and as they're working through this puzzle of a person, Doc Robbins points out that the corner piece of a person is their pelvic area. So you can, like, work from the pelvis out. And their victim has been ID'd. This is inmate number 6920. Antoinette Stella, who is due for release next month. So, like, weird. Like, why is she tying herself underneath a bus to escape when she was getting released in a month? This is where Doc Robbins is like, oh, no. She was murdered. And her cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head. So this was not a prison escape. She was murdered and then tied to the undercarriage of the bus.
So it wasn't until the second time I watched this episode that it kind of dawned on me that I don't think the intention was to have the body come out from underneath the truck with, like, a low thread count. She didn't think that.
No. That's what was there.
Yeah. They probably assumed that they would find them at some point after the bus returned and they did a massive search, and they would just assume the head wound happened during the transit.
Yes.
And then nobody would ask any questions.
Right.
I didn't get that the first time.
Yeah. It was supposed to, we'll learn, and I'm not going to, like, spoil all the details. We will learn that the person who in fact did the murdering and then the tying to the undercarriage of the bus wanted it to look like a failed escape attempt.
Yeah.
That was their intention.
But it's interesting that they're like, you know, I can't help but think of, like, the alternative universe where some CSI would have been called in.
Yeah, to that.
Body underneath.
Yeah.
Pieces, like, would they still have figured the same thing out? Would they gone to the same corner? I don't know. And the coroner said, oh, this person was murdered. Or with it, because, like, he automatically kind of ruled out the possibility that this person got the head wound, under
yeah,
the
in
truck.
The yeah.
And then, you know, the thread count failed. And so it's like there's almost a universe where the fact that it came out in the middle of the road is irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah,
but, I agree. So it was kind of funny. I remember thinking, like, oh, I think I was just so thrown off by the notion that they were, like, the whole, like, oh, because they had cheap sheets. This person got sucked real well and died. And then they were like, oh, no, that's not what happened.
That's what happened.
I think that, like, in the hindsight, they still would have come back to the same place.
One would hope. We'll never know. They also point out I'm just going to say this as someone, and obviously, you know, listeners, you're listening to this on audio. We don't release, like, videos of us doing these podcasts. I'm a fairly heavily tattooed individual. So as a fairly heavily tattooed individual, I just had to laugh that they had to do legitimate testing to find out that this was a tattoo.
Oh, yes.
They're like, what is this mark on her arm? Is it a growth? Is it a small little tattoo? It is a small little tattoo,
like,
but, like,
you would think you could just look at your skin under a microscope, probably. You know what I mean?
And especially prison,
I think it's the insinuation it's a prison tattoo.
Yes,
so
and prison tattoos have been a thing for so long.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. We'll come back to this tattoo. We'll talk about it because it plays a very critical role in later on in this episode. We're with Nick and Sarah now. They're at the prison and they are with a warden, and this is my, and I know it has to be Nick's as well, first spot the guest star
for
is,
sure
I guess, because if it was not, I told Nick before we started recording, I was like, if we do not have at least one shared spot the guest star in common, we'll be very angry.
It's the end of our Facebook friendship.
This might be the end of our 17 year Facebook friendship as of today. This is the one and only Gina Torres, who I primarily know as Zoe from Firefly and Serenity. And also, she's in Hannibal, the TV show Hannibal.
Oh, really?
She is. She's in, like, 5 or 6 episodes of the TV show Hannibal. I imagine that you also know her from Suits.
Yes. Main character in Suits, main cast character. anybody who's watched Suits originally, or as many people apparently did in the last couple of years on
Netflix. Yeah, watch it on Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah, she's one of the head people at the firm where the lawyers are all at, whose name is escaping me for some reason. I didn't even write it down. I just wrote down Gina Torres, Firefly, Suits. Right.
Jessica Pearson.
Jessica Pearson, yes. Because Pearson Hartman is the name of the firm.
Okay, yeah.
She's the Pearson Hartman. I think her husband, who is no longer with us in the show, was maybe the original, but still her. And spoiler alert for Suits is the big, like, gotcha at the end of the season one of Suits is Hartman, who is nowhere to be found, comes back. He was, you know, they'd driven him away because of some shady dealings, and he's coming back trying to wrestle control of the firm. So very, very formulaic television, but I enjoy Suits. Suits is like modern day guilty pleasure television.
That's fair.
Good, even though it's very samey.
Yeah, it's okay. You know,
to a certain extent. But
as humans, we find comfort in consistency.
Yeah.
And in sameness sometimes. So I think it's okay to find that enjoyable.
Yeah.
It doesn't, we have enough. The world is exciting enough right now. We don't need TV to always be super exciting.
I'm much more excited to find out if we have the same next spot the guest star.
Ooh, we'll find out.
If so, where do you know that? Where would you know the same person from? Because I feel like mine is very kind of obscure, I guess.
Okay. All right. We'll find out. I knew this was the one that I assuredly was like, we have to have this one in common.
Absolutely.
So we learned from the warden that the bus in question left at 13:30. We also learn that the victim, Antoinette, was popular with the other inmates. They are introduced to her current cellmate, who claims that she last saw a baby girl. That's how they refer to the victim at lunch. We also learn that they've only been cellmates for 8 days because the warden had recently relocated her because she had tried to smuggle a silver necklace into the prison. And that is a no-no. So the warden moved her from her cell, her previous cell, to this cell. We then have Sarah and Nick with the bus driver. We learn he's the only bus driver at the facility. And he is just a horrible, horrible human being.
I was going to use the word tool, but I think yours is more accurate.
I mean, tool, that is also a fair assessment. He is unabashed. And he's also the type that he's unabashed in his awfulness.
Yes.
Like, he has no shame in admitting how terrible he is. Because he doesn't think he's terrible. He thinks, it's acceptable.
Superiority entitledness complex.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So he is essentially talking about how you can't see the inmates as real people. You have to just see them as less than real people. And they also learn in this exchange that the inmates are the ones that service the prison vehicle. So Sarah's like, great. So the inmates just have free access to these vehicles. Like, great. Also, awesome.
They can come there, technically could come in at any time.
At a time, because they don't lock the gate to the bus. He's like, oh, what are they going to do? Like, hotwire the bus? And she's like, no, but obviously something else happened. Obviously. So we then have Grissom examining the murder weapon from the crime scene he was working at. He does the little smoke technique. He gets a fingerprint. We go back to Warwick. He is back at the scene. There is a Mr. Samuels there who is looking for Zero, the person whose apartment it is, because he is Zero's guardian. And Zero comes up with an officer covered in blood, apologizing. And this is my next spot.
This is my second spot, the guest star, as well.
Okay, so this is T.R. Knight.
Yep.
And I know him as Dr. George O'Malley from Grey's Anatomy, because he's in 103 episodes of Grey's Anatomy.
I know him as Davey.
Okay.
From the hit HBO Max TV show, The Flight Attendant. Starring Kaley Cuoco from Big Bang Theory.
Yes, 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 yes.
And what's the other woman's name? Rita or Maria? I should just look up Zero's IMDb and go to the flight attendant. What's her name? Person I'm thinking of. Rosie Perez.
Okay, okay.
Rosie Perez in that show. That show, I thought it was pretty good. I watched that show. But I saw Zero. I was like, who is that guy? He basically, what's weird is, I'm not going to say that Davey, Davey is the brother of the main character who's played by Kaley Cuoco in the
film. Okay, Okay.
He's in a lot of episodes, but he basically spends the whole show like worrying about her. He's got like kids and a family, and he's just like never has enough time or thing going on. But he's a little like dull.
Oh,
so it was like there was something about the way Zero's character was portrayed that was like just fired the thing. I was like, why do I know this person? Why do I know this actor?
Yeah, you're like, how do I know this person?
And then it was the way he said something later on. I was like, wait, that's Davey.
You're like, it's Davey.
It was one of those ones I probably would have looked up and be like, oh yeah, yeah, I know who this person is at the end. But it wasn't really until like the second scene.
Oh yeah, no, I
that I was like, oh, I knew this. Also, he was like covered in blood, and then the first shot is like
the first shot. He's covered in blood. Yeah,
it's like really short.
It is very short. He just is like, oh, I'm sorry, and he's like standing there covered in blood, and then they cut away. No, I immediately knew who it is because again, he's in 103 episodes of Grey's Anatomy, and I've seen, I think, almost all the episodes of Grey's Anatomy that he's in.
I mean, I saw that on his IMDb as 100 episodes. What's his name? What is he? Mick something?
Dr. George O'Malley. He's not any of the McDreamies or the McSteamies.
Okay.
There was like drama. There was
all my Grey's Anatomy.
There was so there's so much drama on the show. We won't get too much into this, but there was drama not just in the storyline of the show. So he is a homosexual in real life. So he plays a straight character on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
But in real life, he is a out homosexual individual. And one of the other actors used the F word around him, and so they fired him. Not to George O'Malley, the guy who used the F word, and so because he was homophobic and not nice, evidently. So, but that's how I know him is Dr. George O'Malley from Grey's Anatomy.
I know he has children, but now I'm sitting here being like, I was trying to remember if he's gay in the flight attendant show, but he can't be because he dates. In like one of the seasons, he dates this person who's absolutely crazy, who plays a very similar character in the show Mythic Quest, which is an Apple TV show.
Oh, okay.
With the guy from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, who owns Wrexham now.
Yep.
McElroy. And yeah, I don't know. This is a rumor of the show. It's a cascade of guest star of it's like the Kevin Bacon game.
Who knows who? So then we're with Sarah and Nick. They're examining inside of the bus. They find blood. They also find semen. And why semen inside of a women's only detention bus?
I feel like it's not a hard...
It's not a hard jump to figure that out.
Maybe because it's TV and I always like...
Yeah, yeah. They're always like, what? Yeah.
It's always a trope.
We go back to our spot, the guest star. We're with Warwick. He is with Frank and Zero. And we learn that Zero is apologizing because he went out by himself, and he's not supposed to go out by himself. And he went out by himself because he came home from his special school and he found his brother Adonto dead in the kitchen and kind of like freaked out and left. And he is telling Warwick that Adonto was saying that they were going to be rich. Like the last time he talked to Adonto, Adonto was like, I got this thing figured out. We're going to be rich. I'm going to buy you this car and a driver. You're going to be able to go wherever you want. Before we return to that thread, we're with Catherine. She is with the warden and Juanita. Juanita's like, didn't see any blood in the bus. Don't know what you're talking about. And doesn't say that she saw semen in the bus, but doesn't not say that she saw semen in the bus. She's kind of like, well,
yeah,
things happen. And so we learn in this exchange that there are no conjugal visits at this prison. And the only men allowed inside of the correctional facility are the correctional officers.
Yes. There's also like a weird illusion, like the warden is trying to like hide something or suppress them because she starts talking.
Yeah, she
starts talking
to ACL.
She gives her like a look and like shuts it down. And
yeah, yeah.
I feel like maybe there was like, that doesn't really come up too much, but I feel like maybe there was like a plot line that they
cut
after the warden a little bit and then had to clear her name. Yeah. They never really ended up going after her.
I agree that it feels like they dropped some hints that maybe they were going to look at the warden.
Yeah.
But that never really like played out in any like concrete fashion. Instead, we're with Hodges. With Nick, we learn that the white fabrics from the wound are like could be from anything, like any, like essentially like any, could be underwear, could be socks, could be a bra, like just the like, totally generic white fabric. Sarah's also there, and she's able to identify the substance that was found in the mark on her arm as coming from a bug, because Grissom gave her a book on bugs, and she reads when she can't sleep. Nick and Hodges seem a little jelly that she got a gift from Grissom, because they didn't get a gift from Grissom. So what's that about? They finally get around to the fact that the victim had tattooed herself.
Yes.
And thankfully, Sarah is there to ID what it is a tattoo of, which is, of course, half of a heart.
It's open, though, right? Like,
it's
not like the broken heart with the jagged edge. It's really just like an apostrophe.
No. If you look at it, it's like line. It has the outside of it is smooth, but the inside of it is jagged, okay, as if it was blooped apart. Yeah. It looked like, so when she said like, oh, every woman knows what that is, or every girl knows what that is, I had to be like, as someone, you know, raised as a girl, I had the little friendship necklace with one half of the heart, and then my BFF had the other half of their heart. Like, I knew exactly what that was when I saw it. I was like, true, Sarah, I know exactly what that is. We leave the storyline for a bit. Warwick is with Mr. Samuels. It is his print on the knife, which, not great. But he is adamant that he did not kill Odonto. He just came in, found him, took the knife.
Second person to find him.
And because he's the second person to find him and Zero is not there, he essentially panicked and was like, did Zero do this? I don't know. And essentially just didn't report it because he was like trying to figure out, do I have to protect Zero because Zero,
yeah,
like something happened.
Also, where is he right now?
And where is he right now? Yeah. So for his troubles, Mr. Samuels gets 24 hours in a holding cell. We then have Grissom with Doc Robbins. And what is weird with this victim is, with Odonto, is that the stab wounds are just like straight in and out. Like, because normally, if you are being stabbed by somebody else, you're moving. They are moving, you're moving.
You're fighting each other.
You're fighting each other. Yeah, so the stab wounds are not going to be perfect in and out because you're going to be moving around, they're going to be moving around, and so there's going to be some movement of the knife as well. So it's very strange that it was just like pure in, pure out. He also has no defensive wounds. Also very, very strange if somebody is stabbing you for you to just not fight back at all. Doc Robbins also pulled a paper wad out of his stomach, which brings us to Warwick with I put paper guy because I always forget what this character's name is. Ronnie. That's what it is. Ronnie. Warwick is with Ronnie. They're trying to get details.
Yeah, Eric Stone Street of...
Yes, Eric
Stone Street. This might be one of the last episodes. I don't know.
Yeah, because he's not... I know. I feel... Every time I think it's the last episode, he's back again. And I'm like, oh, he's back again. But he's not here forever. We know this. We know our time with Ronnie, the paper guy, is limited. They're trying to get details from the paper wad pulled from the victim's stomach. They end up realizing, or Warwick really, end up realizing that it's from the palms and that it is a receipt for a $10,000 marker. This leads Warwick to the casino. He is with casino manager. They don't really ever, like, floor manager, they don't exactly explain 100% what this guy does, but he works for the casino. And he is explaining that, like, he recognizes the victim, and the victim had a double up system. So Warwick's like, okay, well, I want the footage. And there is woven throughout this episode references to Warwick's struggles with gambling.
Yep.
And so in this scene, the casino manager is like, hey, don't you look familiar? Like, I feel like I know you. And he's like, oh, maybe because I've been here on like other crime scenes. But the implication is that he knows him from work gambling there.
The double up scheme is, I think, typically shut down pretty quickly in most casinos.
Probably.
Because it can be actually quite effective because it becomes so mathematically unlikely.
Yeah, to keep losing.
To lose, but I know it from roulette, right? Where you bet black $100.
Yeah.
If you win, you get $200, and if you lose, you bet $200. So if you win, you win $400, which means that you're up $100, and then you go back to betting $100.
Yeah.
And you just do it, so it's like 50-50 each time. So like the odds of losing like 10 coin flips become so small that you're likely to make money. You can usually keep doing it over and over again.
Yeah.
I don't know how the odds translate to something like blackjack, right?
Yeah.
When there's a lot more things going on.
Yeah.
But
when there's a lot
if
more
you tried
factors.
To do that in like a game like roulette, they will kick you out of the casino. They will take your money on the and kick you out of the casino and ask you never to come back.
So what is Nick is saying is like, we do not endorse this system. Don't go to a casino and try to use this system.
It's very like indicative of the, you know, the idea like, oh, I got a system, we're gonna win.
We can beat
the house. And so the story is kind of like
you can't
really beat the house.
Generally speaking, no. The house always wins. We have a Catherine and Sarah walk and talk, and we learn that their victim, understandably, bought tampons every single month. No fail. But not for the last few months. I wonder why a female inmate would suddenly just stop buying tampons.
She stole them all from her roommate when she left her own cell.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. No. We learn in the very next scene, because Catherine walks into the morgue where Doc Robbins is and asks about a pregnancy test. And he's like, why would I do a pregnancy test on a female inmate? And Catherine's like, there are reasons. Do the pregnancy test. So they use a home pregnancy test because it's just as good as the ones that they get, and they're cheaper. And Doc Robbins is a fiscally minded fellow.
Like, they just stabs her bladder.
I mean,
and just extracts urine. I was like, probably works.
That probably works. It seems reasonable to me. So he processes the home pregnancy test, and there's the plus sign. She was expecting. Before we follow that one, we return to work. He sits down with Archie to look at the footage from the casino. And they're essentially just watching him try his double up system and just lose. Lose.
Very unlucky.
Very unlucky. To the point where the dealer had a 10 card 21, which is astronomically unlikely.
Yeah, that part was weird. I thought there was going to come back to like cheating in the casinos part or something. Oh,
yeah.
Right? And it just never came back. I guess they're just trying to make him sound super unlucky, I guess.
Yes. Just like,
it doesn't matter how many cards it takes the dealer to stop. It's a question of whether they bust or not.
Yeah.
Because like, you could have just flipped over like at 8 instead of, you know, the last 3 cards or something. And as long as they, you know, still total up high enough and.
Yeah, I think
you lost. Like,
I think, like you were saying,
weird.
I think the point was to highlight how incredibly unlucky he was. Like, what are the chances?
Yeah,
that he would lose to a 10-card 21.
But they never really come back to it. They're just sort of like that one. This one scene is kind of like
yeah.
I will say, I've learned, completely unrelated, in the last couple weeks that there are like certain setups that the mob would use and slide into a deck. Like guaranteed, like a house win.
Or
whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It would basically like, no matter what you did, you were going to lose, and the house was going to win. And so when I saw that, I think that's where my thought was. Oh, that must have been like.
Yeah, that must have been it.
I bet you this is going to be an example of that. And yeah, I think it's a recency bias of having seen that video. It was like a Wired talks to like a game, but like a guy who's used to cheat casinos.
Okay.
He was like telling the story, like, you know, the casinos don't cheat anymore, but when they're run by the mob, they used to, and he was giving this as an example
of how it worked. We then see a cacophony of correctional officers at HQ just milling about. Warden is also there. Catherine has a warrant. She's like, we're testing their DNA. Like, there was semen in the bus, and one of your inmates was pregnant. The only people that have access are your correctional officers.
This is a very like TV moment too, because like obviously they would have shown the warrant before bringing them all back down to the station.
Oh, of course they would have.
Like, they have all prison to run. You know, like, presumably that's not all of them. Some of them are still standing guard to all the inmates.
Right. Yeah. You can't just take all of the COs from a prison.
But like, it's definitely TV. Like, I think in reality you would probably like have some of them come in, go to the prison for the ones that are working, you know. You'd make sure you collect them all. You wouldn't just be like, all right, let's all gather up, okay, we're not gonna start until everybody gets here, you know. It's not an icebreaker.
No, definitely not. We then have the detective approaching Warwick. He has a document that appears that Frank and Zero signed to take money from Zero's account. So they confront Frank about this, Mr. Samuels, and he is adamant that he did not sign this document. He would never have signed off on withdrawing this money from Zero's account. So he copies another document, like, in his handwriting to provide for a handwriting sample. So Warwick goes back to Ronnie, our lovely paper guy, who is in not many more episodes, and he is letting Warwick know that Zero's signature is authentic, but not Frank's. Somebody forged Frank's. And he doesn't think that Zero forged it, but without comparison, he can't say that Odonto did. And obviously, yes. Odonto's dead. He can't provide a handwriting sample. But
yeah, I think, like, looking at Zero's handwriting, it doesn't look like...
Yeah, it doesn't look like how he forged. Writes. Yeah, yeah. So...
I take umbrage with the fact that they never tried to get a single sample of someone's handwriting at a time where people were writing and filling out
writing way more often. I know.
Yeah.
I know. So they don't. Instead, we have a Catherine and Greg Sanders walk and talk. We learn that the blood on the bus, baby girls, the semen, the drivers, and the driver is also the baby daddy to baby girl. So, oops. So that brings Catherine to interrogation with the driver and his attorney. Sarah and Nick are watching this exchange. Again, the episode really doesn't want you to forget how much you're supposed to hate this guy. They're like, just in case you forgot from your first experience with him how much you hated him, yeah. Here it goes again.
I feel like, to be fair, at the end of this episode, if you're like, oh, you gotta spend an afternoon with this guy or the murderer, I would choose the murderer.
Oh, I would definitely hang out with the murderer first. 100% I would. 100% I would.
His crime is clearly not as bad.
It's not, but he's awful.
But as a person, like...
He's terrible.
The murderer's crime is a crime of
passion. And a broken heart and...
You know, probably a mild amount of insanity accumulated through years of incarceration.
Yeah.
And the kind of treatment that guys like this are imposing on them.
Yes.
But this guy is just never a good human being.
He is never a good human being. And he reminds us of that immediately in the scene by saying that baby girl couldn't get pregnant due to too many turns at the coat hanger. He is self-aware enough, though, that when Catherine gives him a look like, wow, you just said that, he retorts, those are her words, not mine. So it's like he knows how terrible he is. But regardless,
but
how
no terrible shame.
He is. No shame. No shame. He admits to sleeping with her. He admits that it could, like, it well obviously could be his baby. But
the notion is he didn't know, right?
Like he didn't know. He didn't know she was pregnant. No. Yeah. But he didn't kill her. He's like, look, I will serve my time for having sex with an inmate.
Yeah, he's also one of the most realists. Like, he's like, his lawyer's like, don't say anything. He's like, listen.
Yeah, they have a dead to rights on this one. Like,
it's like, I don't understand how DNA works, dude.
I know.
There's only one person in the whole world who's this is back to being their baby. They've already done the test, so they already know it's me. They already have my DNA, my baby's DNA.
Yep.
It's like, that's why we're here. It's like, yeah, I did it. I'm not going to try to get in front of a jury and say I didn't. I guess I'll just do my time. But like, please, like, I'm not
going in for murder.
I'm not going to forever prison.
Yeah, I'll go in for, you know, 5 years prison. Don't want to go in for forever prison.
What's the great line from Office Space?
Oh, gosh. It's been like, so long since I've seen Office Space.
They're referring to white collar prison to like correctional. I really probably shouldn't say it because it's maybe a little too vulgar for this podcast.
Watch the movie. Office Space is a great movie.
But it's basically like there's light prison and there's heavy prison, basically.
There's light prison and there's... That is 100% sure. Like where Martha Stewart did her prison time, light prison.
Yeah. It was a difference between like a little bit of embezzlement and them embezzling millions of dollars. And they're like, they don't send you to like little, like, you know, Club Med for that. They send you to serious prison.
We then, before we follow or kind of... before we get more into that storyline, where we're with Hodges again. We have another Hodges appearance. This time he's with Warwick. They're having their own walk and talk. And he's letting Warwick know that there was house paint on the knife holder. And Warwick is like, why would there be house paint on like the handle of the knife? Like, that's...
I mean, I can think of a thousand weird reasons why that would happen.
But... Same, but this seems baffling to them at the time. This brings us to Grissom telling Warwick a story about a guy who killed himself.
Yep.
This lovely little tale. But Grissom is telling him this tale because he wants Warwick to take in the state of mind of the victim in context with the evidence. So don't just look at the evidence. Factor in the victim's state of mind before he has a chance to do that. Catherine and Greg Sanders are talking about skin and how Greg Sanders tested a lot of different spots on like the victim and all this sort of stuff to see if they could get epithelials. And he did get epithelials on the fabric. And Catherine's like, great, we can prove the driver killed baby girl. And Greg Sanders like, no, you can't, because the epithelials belong to a woman. So,
and or XX chromosome, since the
XX female DNA, baby.
This is actually like, this is so the title is actually clever because it's a double reference. So it's XX being the two X chromosomes. XX is also 20, which was the total of the 10 card run that the dealer had in the blackjack.
Nice. Game. All right. I did not catch that. I like it. I like
It's a good title.
I'm just glad that Nick is here. I mean, I'm glad Nick is here for a plethora of reasons, but I just like, for reasons unknown to myself, I cannot be detail oriented when I'm watching the show. And so I'm just glad that he picks up on these things where I'm just like, what? Really? Oh, that makes sense. That sounds good.
For the math.
Yeah. Well, also the math. Yes. The math is also, I'm actually good at math. I just hate doing it.
Yeah. It's like, really the Roman numerals, right? Yeah.
I just,
7 years of Latin school.
Yeah, see, you did also have that. All I did was sing in Latin for The Sound of Music, so that was like my only experience with Latin.
You probably speak about as much Latin as I do today.
I don't remember any of the songs I used to sing. So as they're having this conversation, Doc Robbins walks in with the skull. He's like, hey, clean the skull up for you. Here's the skull. Bestow it upon you. Before we dive...
Is there a Hamlet reference?
A Hamlet. This is where they do the Hamlet reference. Yeah, okay. It's right here. Yeah. Before we dive further into examining the skull, Work is back at the apartment, and as he's walking through the apartment, like walking through different like key areas related to the crime, it is being interspersed with flashbacks to Adonto killing himself. So this is where like we see all the puzzle pieces being put together of like how he killed himself, and we'll learn very soon. Actually, we'll learn in the very, I had to turn my notebook over. We'll learn in the very next scene why. Well, I mean, I think we already know the why, in the sense of that he was very, very upset and very desperate.
Yes, but there's more.
But there is more. Also, I will say.
You should.
I will say that I did put a line here. I don't know. Oh, you're not going to be able to see it.
No.
All caps. I'm going to explain why I put something in all caps for the next section, because I think it's important, especially when we talk about people's state of minds.
Oh yes,
in interrogations and such.
I want to say one thing. Yes. Hopefully everybody here has watched this, but just so it's clear
again, watch the episode.
Yeah, the reenactment is that like the reason there's paint is he stuck the knife in the doorway and stabbed himself a couple times, and also why there was like the crawling across the floor.
Yep.
While he was bloodied, he had already stabbed himself, and he was just trying to set the scene up.
Yeah,
and die, and so it's kind of like a really, I don't know, there's like an extra level of sadness to this, because it's both,
it's very sad,
very motivated and committed. He doesn't have regret,
no,
the whole process,
no,
but you know, he's kind of like a broken man, and he thinks he's doing the one last thing that gives his life value.
Yes,
it's the person he cares about the most.
Yes,
which we'll talk about in a second, but we'll it's and I have a comment on the fine folks at CSI.
Okay, so maybe your fine thoughts are why I have a giant line in caps here. So we've sort of glossed over it in earlier scenes of this episode, but Zero, from what we have been told, has the mental capacity of a 9-year-old.
Yes,
a 9-year-old. Okay, I want everyone to keep this in mind when we talk about this scene, because, and like, has a legal guardian, and in this scene they are talking about appointing him a new legal guardian. So they are accepting that Zero needs a guardian. He is not capable of watching out for himself. He needs a legal guardian. Despite this, Work and the detective talk to him alone.
Yes.
And tell him not only that his brother killed himself, they're telling a 9-year-old, like, again, yes, he is a grown man, but he has the mental capacity.
He is an adult aged human.
Yes.
Who
body of an adult human.
Legally treated as not having the mental capacity of an adult.
But a mind of a 9-year-old.
They should not be telling him this at all.
Why are you telling him?
Also,
A, that his brother killed himself. That's not let the guardian, you know, like however the guardian wants to handle that conversation, let the guardian handle it. Not for you to do. A. Then to tell him, oh, and the reason he killed himself was to give you money, but you're not getting any money.
Yes.
So
I hope you're happy now.
good luck.
Also,
good luck, child.
You have a guardian who didn't do anything wrong. Not really. Why do they assume he's not going to be their guardian? His guardian anymore?
Because he is being charged with what do they say they're charging Mr. Samuels with?
Obstructing justice.
Or leaving a crime, fleeing a crime scene or something.
I think that man is not going to serve a minute more in jail because he is the legal guardian. You should treat him as if he was a parent.
Right.
If you're a parent and you find a dead body in your child's
house.
Let's say your college age kid's apartment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're not to be around.
Yeah, you're going to freak out and try to find them.
You run around and try to find them before stopping and calling the police. They're going to give you probation and tell you you did a bad thing, but it's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you cared about your family more than, somebody else. That's probably okay. You didn't lie to the police. You told them the truth when they asked you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. And it's not going to disqualify you from being their parent anymore. It's like he's going to, that was a weird thing. This is what I really have to say is, let's not be so glib about this insurance thing. Every season, there's a story of someone murders, takes their own life.
Yeah, for insurance money.
To their family. And they're like, guess what? You're not getting the money.
You're not getting the money. Ba-da-ba-ba-da.
You didn't ask them to kill themselves. You didn't ask them to do anything. You're dealing with the tragedy of losing one of the people you care most about in life.
The only time
we just want you to know that you're not going to get the money.
The only time that the glibness was somewhat acceptable was the case where the man murdered his wife and then collected the insurance money.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, we can't charge you for her murder yet, but the insurance money company is going to take all their money back because this is now suspicious.
The best part is he got away with it.
He did get away with it. I literally put in all caps, why tell him? Why tell him? He is a 9-year-old. You were just like, oh, hey, yeah, really sucks to have found your brother dead. We're going to add on to this. We're going to triple on to this. Not only did you find your brother dead, your brother killed himself. Yeah, that's pretty terrible. Okay, but gets even better. Not only did he kill himself, he killed himself to give you money because he lost all your money. But because he killed himself, you are in fact not getting any money. So you have no money. Your brother killed himself. Your brother's dead. You're the one who found his body. Congratulations. I guess we'll find you a new guardian at some point because your other guardian's going to jail. So, all right, good luck. Bye.
I will say, as somebody who was actually 9 years old when a parent died and the police came to my house to tell my dad, legal guardian.
Yes, your legal guardian.
Can you imagine if the police officers were like, oh, hey, kid, by the way, sorry to hear your mom's dead.
Like, what? What?
Like, those people would be fired.
They'd be
never work again.
This is not acceptable. Oh, my God.
It's all for the TV drama.
It is all for the TV drama. But as I was watching this, I was like, what? What is happening?
Right. It did at the very least a great disrespect for the notion of mental capacity.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm glad that it was as weird to you as it was to me.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, first I was like, why are we always being so happy about, this? And we came with this trope of insurance. And then they were like, you're going to do a guardian. And I was like, right. Why are they telling this kid if he's needs a legal guardian? why are you telling him?
Okay, that was the point that really drove it home for me was you accept that he needs a legal guardian.
Yeah. Imagine
all and in the same breath of accepting I need a legal guardian, I'm also going to tell you all these horrendous things about your brother. Have a good one.
And he doesn't need to know that now. He doesn't.
No.
It's not important.
It's not important.
It's to tell the audience, I guess. But
yeah, it is to tell the audience. But you couldn't have told Mr. Samuels, you know what I mean?
Apparently not. He's stuck. He's stuck. As far as we know, he's still in jail.
I don't know.
Where's his lawyer? He must have got one of the really bad ones.
So that's the end of storyline B. We go back to storyline A. Nick and Sarah are with the skull and a software. I did have to laugh to myself because Nick is the one that knows how to run this software. And I was like, is this why Nick is always away at conferences?
Well, that's what he learns at these conferences.
That's why he learns at the conferences, right? Is how to run all these software.
That's why he's a CSI 4 or 2, or I don't know what direction it goes.
I don't know. I can't remember either. But as they're using the software to examine the wound, Sarah knows what it is. It's a lock. This brings Catherine and Jim Brass. They're back with the warden, and they are... Oh, and cellmate. I love when I'm trying to, like, read my own handwriting. It's great. And so Catherine's checking the lock that belongs to the cellmate. Not her lock. Or at least her lock is not testing positive for blood. So they were like, But then they're like, oh, hey, she has only lived here for 8 days. Where did she live before the 8 days? She lived on D block. So they pop on over to D block to Juanita again. She used to be Juanita's cellmate. And look at that. Juanita's lock. Blood all over it. All sorts of blood. And then, after a lengthy conversation about laundry, they also discover that one of her socks that she's currently wearing has a blood stain on it.
The weirdest slow take off your shoes.
Take off your shoes, and then I'm going to slowly peer underneath your toesies.
She probably would have got a... They probably wouldn't even check the bottom of her feet if she just took them off right away.
Yeah.
She drew so much more suspicion to herself.
And she made a lot more suspicious. So then we have Catherine.
She just, swapped her socks with somebody else.
Or thrown them away. She's not had socks, but she did not.
Or this used or tied her to the undercarriage.
That's true.
And stole her sock.
This brings us to Catherine with Juanita. We learn that Juanita is in prison due to a charge of possession with intent to sell. And it was her, man that set her up, essentially. And I will say, I do remember watching a documentary. I think it was, weirdly enough, this is going to be... I feel like I should research this, because I feel like when I see this episode, I think about this and then I go, when did... I swear I watched maybe a show where Kathy Griffin, the comedian, went to a female, like a all-female prison, and she like spoke to the inmates and then did like a comedy show for them. And in speaking to the inmates and learning about them, and then as she was like, talking to the viewers, that... I think it's something like 80% of women who are in prison are in prison related to charges to their men.
Could be related to drug charges.
Drug charges. It's like just they were picked out by their boyfriend. They were drug mules for their boyfriend. They were, it is like 80% of women who are in prison are in prison essentially because their partners roped them into illegal activity. And so this is the case for Juanita here, and she denies it, but then there's a lot of waffling in this episode. Catherine's like, so it was baby girl, like your first time with a woman? And she's like, I'm not like that. And then like two breaths later, she's like, I never felt a love like this before. And I was like, it's all right, sweetie. Like, I'm, as someone who loves across the spectrum of genders, it's cool. Like, what's in someone's pants doesn't have to dictate how you feels about them. You just feel about them how you feel about them. But Catherine sees the other half of that heart on Juanita. So she knows that they loved one another. But they had a spat because Juanita found out about Doug, the driver, impregnating baby girl. According to baby girl, it was all like to use Doug for her own ends. And then they got into a fight. And then Juanita was convinced that baby girl got herself transferred out of their cell. Like they made up, and then baby girl was moved. And Juanita thought that baby girl was the one who requested the transfer. So she just felt heartbroken and turned on. And she just thought baby girl was playing her. And so she took her revenge and killed her and tied her to the undercarriage of the bus in an attempt to make it look like baby girl was trying to escape. And then to reference the other crime, to dig the knife in a little bit more, Catherine is like, oh, hey, she in fact did not request the move. She was telling you the truth. The warden moved her. And the warden moved her because she was trying to sneak this necklace in. And I'm pretty sure this necklace was for you. So how do you feel now, Juanita?
Just dig that thorn in a little more.
Bam!
In case you were not going to feel remorse for your ex-girlfriend being dead for the rest of your life, I just want to make sure you feel that.
I really...
Now...
And to paint the scene, she's essentially crying. Juanita's crying throughout almost this entire thing. So, like, already she's not feeling great about this. And then we follow a very, very forlorn one back to her cell, and she lies down, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, you could smuggle in all the necklaces you want, but if you've still, if you know, if you're cheating on your partner, that still doesn't like change a lot, change the infuriating circumstances that led to her to decide to murder her.
It is true.
I guess, ex at that point.
Yeah. But. Yeah. And then that's the end of the episode. So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
It was pretty meh. I felt like I ended up giving it 2.5, but with a watch. Like, it's not a bad episode. It just, it's a little weird. It's a little wonky. Yeah, I was like, I was sort of between 2.5 and 3, and I kind of stuck with 2.5. But yeah, I was like, the first watch through was fine. It was like, it wasn't like hard to watch. It was just, I felt like a very mediocre storyline. Mediocre kind of evidence, not a ton of like cast character development, but yeah, so it's maybe just on that cusp of 2.5 and 3, but I give it a 2.5 for the watch.
Okay, that's fair. I am giving it a 3 out of 5. I feel, and maybe I think part of this was, I think the last episode was so bad that this one I was like, this is all right.
Yeah, there was some of that this where I was right. Like, we had some bad episodes. I was like, this episode was okay. And I started, okay. I did my rewatch. I was kind of like, I mean, it's not as good as I think.
Yeah, I was like, maybe it's not. Yeah, it's, I'm giving it a watch. You definitely don't need to rewatch it. I think, I will say that I think if you just watch the episode to just watch the episode, I think it's a fine episode, which is a part of why I'm giving it a 3. This is not an episode that holds up under scrutiny. You just have to like watch it and be like, all right, and then just move on. If you stop and you think too hard about this episode,
watch
the ranking,
half speed.
the ranking is going to go down. You just have to watch it, enjoy it. There's some funny little quips. I do like the lab is involved. We get Ronnie and Archie and Hodges and Greg Sanders. And I feel Warwick, who has been kind of pushed off the side, had at least like a little bit of like, oh, hey, remember Warwick, who has a gambling problem? And
alas, poor Warwick.
And he can kind of get into the head of this victim because he's been in those like desperate situations at the casino. So I think it had a few points of it that I was like, you know what? I'm going to rank this higher than I've ranked some of the episodes before, because I do think it is a better episode. Does it hold up under scrutiny? No, it's definitely like second watcher. You're like, wait, they know that he has the capacity of 9-year-old and they're like telling him all these horrible things without a legal guardian there. Like, oh, okay, cool. But I think if you just like watch it to watch it, it's fine. So I'm giving it 3 out of 5. Is it a great episode? No. Is it a good episode? Yeah, it's pretty good. It's fine. I think I enjoyed it a lot more when I like watched the series originally. I do think that this is a, like, if you're younger and again, maybe you just don't think as hard about it, it's not as upsetting. And then you get older and you're like,
yeah, I think there's a certain amount of like, I feel like I started to get, you know, when you start to get judgy, I think like you want these characters to be better.
Yeah.
Because you like them, you know?
Yeah.
By the way, just the show you were talking about is called Kathy Griffin, My Life on the D List, Season 3, Episode 5, Arizona State.
Okay, so there's the one. Yeah. Okay.
But the interesting thing is, I think the stat is actually that 70% of women in prison jails have experience with violence from a male partner before.
Yes, that is the stat.
And a big part of that is coercion and involvement. But the citation is the exact percentage remains elusive in terms of like how many are really like there because of that abuse. Like directly, as opposed to obviously it has an impact on your life. And so it's certainly an indirect contributor, but it's probably at least 30% or higher based on surveys of women.
Of women in prison. Okay.
And so it is a huge significant contributor directly, but it's also probably a huge contributor indirectly as well.
Okay. So that is the stat. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks to Google's new AI mode, which when I searched for this, nothing came up. And it's like, do you want to try new AI mode? And then it literally told me everything I wanted to know.
I was like, do you want this? And you're like, I do.
Are like Facebook and Instagram posts and are just completely useless of like clips from the
episode
more recently. This is like
something she does.
Something she gets involved with now.
Oh, okay.
Like, or maybe not this directly, but something to do with prisoners. And so it's like, it was interesting to have that AI mode actually understand what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the the dumb AI was just like, here's a keyword prisoner, Kathy Griffin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So maybe one day this podcast will be brought to you by AI.
Maybe.
When Raven and Nick decide when, like, season 17, episode 2, that, like, they're just too busy.
There's too much stuff going on in their lives.
Like, hey, Google, can you clone our voices and just produce content for the next month? We're going on vacation.
We're going on vacation. We will be back next week or not.
The real us.
The real us. I think the following week. We'll be back. Nick is going on vacation.
Yes, Nick is going to Ireland.
So I don't think there'll be an episode next week. Yeah. There'll be an episode the week following. So, but it'll be us. It will not be AI. And we will be back to review season 4, episode 18, Bad to the Bone.
Da-na-na-na-na.
But otherwise, we will talk to you then, listeners.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.